Today on Vox Talks Economics, how should the EU respond to Trump? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. Remember, subscribe. Follow us on Instagram as well at Vox Talks Economics. In January, anticipating the second Trump presidency, Moreno Bertoldi of the Italian Institute for International Political Studies and Marco Buti of the European University Institute published a column for Vox EU titled America Under Trump, Domestic and European Implications. So it's now a month since the inauguration, and it's fair to say a lot has happened already. So in a special episode, I'm talking to Marco Moreno about what those implications are and, from what we have seen so far, what the political and economic challenges for EU countries are going to be. Moreno, welcome.
Hello, Tim. Thanks for inviting us.
And Marco, welcome as well.
Hello, Tim. Nice to be with you.
Moreno, has this first month of Trump-era policymaking gone as you expected it?
We had great expectations for the Trump presidency, not necessarily positive, but great expectations. But I have to admit that Donald Trump went even beyond these expectations. Just in 10 days, he issued more executive order than any other American president in the first 100 days. This time he has a team, he has well prepared, and he wants to be disruptive. This would confirm that this second Trump presidency will be a mercurial presidency that will disrupt significantly the status quo. However, one of the elements of the mercurial presidency that is unpredictable, and being unpredictable means that it creates a lot of uncertainty, and we are starting already to see an impact on both consumer and investors' decisions.
Unpredictability, Marco, seems to be part of Trump policy making. In January, in this article, you made the point that the US policy has got room for experimentation. That's what you called it. What do you mean by this? Does the US have more room for policy experimentation than the EU does?
Yes, indeed. We say room for experimentation because in spite of the perception of the American public, which brought Donald Trump back to the presidency, the US economy is actually in a pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. The latest forecast from the IMF, they put growth in 2024 around 2.8, 2.7%, and growth in 2025 around the same. So there is quite a strong momentum. And second, you have unemployment rate around 4%, which is clearly very low. There is a black spot there, which is on the inflation side. We had the latest figures around 3%. But this implies that the inner contradictions which pervades the Trump program would take time to come to the fore. Now, we see three inner contradictions. I mean, there is one macroeconomic contradiction, which is what Scott Bessent said, three times the three. So 3% growth, 3% budget deficit, 3 million additional oil barrels by 2028. I think the likelihood of this coming through is basically nil. So this is the first inner contradiction. The second one is a balance of payment contradiction. Experience has shown you cannot curb the trade deficit via tariffs. Unless you change the saving investment balance, you cannot manage and reduce the external deficit. And the third contradiction is a microeconomic one, which is related to the current shape of the relations between big financiers of the Trump administration and the budget of the new administration. You cannot sustain in the long term the innovative potential of the American economy with a situation of an oligarchy shaping up.
But what we're saying with this is that because of the economy that he has inherited, Donald Trump has more room to perhaps make policy errors if they turn out to be that than the EU would have.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you take, again, the shape of the EU economy, it is clear that we are hardly in positive territory. So there is basically a stagnation. I mean, you have the European Commission, the IMF, main forecasters pointing to a shallow recovery this year and the next, but this is not counting on the huge uncertainty that is being created by Donald Trump and the effect of tariffs. We know we depend on the US in a sense more than the other way around. So there are risks there. At the same time, I think we have to deal with the situation as it stands. And doing our best to avoid a trade war does not mean passive and accept anything that would come from Washington.
Am I going to impose tariffs on the European Union? Do you want the truthful answer, or should I give you a political answer? Absolutely. Absolutely. The European Union has treated us so terribly.
So first of all, Moreno, we have to talk about Donald Trump's favorite word, as he says, tariffs. We have learned of his plans to impose tariffs on steel and European cars. If he goes through with this, what is the impact on European growth of this?
If he goes through with the tariffs on steel and aluminum, as well as on cars, the first impact is on the two sectors and would be pretty bad for European companies. In the case of the steel and aluminum, the problem is not the US itself, but the fact is that there is a lot of overcapacity created by China, and therefore the sector is already suffering. The US is the second export market for the steel products, for instance, just after Turkey. And therefore, I mean, if this market shrinks, it has a negative impact on the sector. And countries like Germany, that is the main exporter to the US from the EU side, Italy and Spain would suffer the consequences of the tariffs. But we have to say that with steel and aluminum, we are in a way prepared. I mean, it happened already in 2018, and we implemented countermeasures against the US, some retaliatory measures that were targeted. So what happened was that the EU targeted US export to our continent that came from mainly red states. So where Harley Davidson motorcycles, peanut butter, I think, from Georgia, the bourbon from Kentucky, or the oranges from Florida. So to make red states, Republican states, to pay politically for the decision taken by the administration. And I expect that this time the kind of measures in response to the tariffs on steel and aluminum will be very similar. For the car sector, the situation is more difficult for Europe because steel and aluminum are important export, but in the end are less than 2% of the total export from the EU to the United States. This is not the case for the cars and car parts sector and so on. In our Vox EU column, we show the amount of export of new cars to the United States. That is pretty relevant. We know that the sector is in a difficult situation currently, and therefore, the tariffs on the automotive sectors would be pretty painful and will require a pretty strong response from the EU side.
Marco, some people will be thinking, hang on, we have seen this movie before. Was it 7 years ago for the first Trump trade war? The EU managed not to get caught up in most of it and sat out the really difficult part of the trade war. How did that happen? Why?
It is true, we have seen this movie, though whether it's the same movie, it is disputable. Anyway, the first movie back in 2017-2018 was characterized by a trip to Washington of the Commission President at that time, Jean-Claude Juncker, who had a meeting with President Trump, and he came to Washington with an offer, which at the time the president of the United States could not refuse. And the offer was, okay, look, we understand there is this bilateral imbalance. We European will buy more American products, soybeans, and liquid natural gas, what they talked about. I was a little bit of a gamble, I have to say, because he did not have any authority to impose that back in Europe, but it worked anyway. And if you look at the increase of both import of soybeans and liquid natural gas, we saw this accelerating in the further quarters and years. This proves that you can, to a certain extent, try to come to a deal. It proves also, because the macro data show it, my second contradiction that I pointed out before actually hit, because there was no decrease of the trade imbalance between US and Europe. Now, the question is that you enter that room again, is it the same movie or not? I mean, it's difficult to think that that would be the same. Trump is better prepared. At the time, also, he backed off because when the US adopted tariffs against China, the stock market crashed by 3%. And also, they were closer to the midterm elections. So seeing this, I think this was a warning sign. Now, the question is that, is it going to be the same this time round? I have some doubts that that would be enough.
I must also say that, of course, the European Union is prepared.
The Commission President this time round, Ursula von der Leyen, has made a different offer that he can't refuse.
The European Union will respond firmly. We are always open for business. We think we should intensify the cooperation that we have between the European Union and the United States. But we will also be very firm on our principles.
She has promised firm and proportionate countermeasures. The Trade Commissioner has backed that up. Why isn't the Juncker strategy being considered? Is she serious about these countermeasures?
I think they are serious. That trade policy is exclusive competence of the EU and the European Commission. So they have been preparing about this even before the November election. So I think they have the weapons in store there. Part of it will be similar to what Juncker had happy sleeves at the time. There are some signs there will be also something different. And I think what Moreno indicated before, which is not an outright horizontal response, but a targeted one, I think would again be the name of the game. This time round, I think it has to be even more targeted, hitting Trump and the US administration where it hurts. And it is clear Trump looks very much at the stock exchange. So things that will impact negatively on that. And we have already seen it. Part of the story of the withdrawal from Mexico and Canada tariffs was also because the stock market reacted badly. And second, I think part of the targeting would be to hit the billionaire, which are at the basis of the support of Trump in his campaign and in this administration. So I think there has to be an intelligent set of sanctions, not across the board, and hopefully that would work.
Moreno, how credible is this European Commission threat?
I think that can be pretty credible. I mean, it's true we don't have the commanding heights in this war. I mean, as Marco has argued before, I mean, the Trump administration has more margins for maneuver than we have, but still we can fight back. And as Marco said, I mean, if the measures are targeted and politically painful, they can be quite effective. I mean, one thing that is not to be forgotten is that, for instance, if measures are taken that hit the stock market, the nominal losses are much bigger than the losses that you have from the tariffs. I mean, they may be temporary, but as perception is politically very important in the United States. I mean, if people perceive that trade wars have a very negative impact on the stock market, that is a minus that Trump has to take into account, as he did, in fact, in 2018. The other things not to forget is that we are not the only one involved in these trade conflicts. The rest of the world is more or less indirectly affected. I mean, just the steel tariffs, it's much more Canada, Mexico, but also Brazil and South Korea. And therefore, I mean, there will be an aggregated effect of all these negative measures on the U.S. economy. So the EU, taking into account also the international context, might have more room for maneuver that it would appear only looking at a bilateral confrontation. The last point not to forget is that it's true. I mean, the 2024 data indicate that the EU has a trade surplus that is above 200 billion euro, but on the other hand, the US has a service surplus that is more than 100 billion euro. And if you take into account into that, I mean, the imbalance is not so big as if only take one part of the balance of payments.
So it's easy to get caught up in the news as it's happening, but let's have a look at the longer term implications, Marco. One thing about tariffs is they are affecting the different members of the community differently, and also politically, opinion of Trump and his policies varies very widely between countries now. How important is it that the EU speaks with one voice? How risky if it doesn't?
It is vital. I think we cannot belittle that element. And I have to say, some signs of the initial reactions do not go in the right direction. But here, really, political leadership is absolutely of the essence, because we risk here to have for, let's say, short-term advantages on a bilateral basis, we would pay a heavy collective and individual cost in the medium term. So it is absolutely essential that we remain united. As I mentioned before, on trade policy, you have an exclusive competence of that. And it is important that, however difficult it may be politically, not to break the unity on other areas also. This implies that since it is virtually impossible to keep the 27 together other areas, that one would actually have a venture into unknown territory, which the EU will have to accept, which is the, let's say, coalition of the willing, for instance, on defense or other strategies. But when it comes to tariffs and trade, it is essential that we keep all united, because this is an exclusive competence. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to happen, because Donald Trump can treat Parmesan different, maybe better than Camembert. But at the end of the day, Italy does not have anything to give in return, in trade terms, given the exclusive competence of the EU. So, yes, I think politically it is absolutely essential. And hopefully what comes out of the next German elections from the next days would actually confirm that we find back a leadership in Europe, which is essential in these circumstances.
Marina, where are we seeing this fragmentation at the moment?
Well, we are not seeing it yet because we are in a very early stage. We have not to forget that we are all taking the whirlwind of Trump action, executive orders and so on, and we forget that he's there only since the 21st of January, so not even 1 month. And therefore, I mean, it's still too early to see whether there is fragmentation among Europeans, although, as Marco said, there are some worrying signals. I think that we will have the first indication on how things are going on the response that the European Union will give to the steel and aluminum tariffs. The response is rather uncontroversial. As I said before, I mean, the retaliation will concern the products that were involved in the initial retaliation of 2018, and therefore it should be uncontroversial. However, if some European countries should disolidarize or make reservations, that would be a pretty worrying signal. But I expect that the first stage, let's hope that the response will be quite united.
A lot of European growth over the last, well, what we say 20, 25 years has been driven by finding export markets and developing free trade around the world. 10 years ago, this was uncontroversial. Now we live in a more protectionist environment. Marco, should the EU embrace protectionism, or should it keep pushing for more free trade? For example, what it has recently agreed with the Mercosur community which I hear might take a year or two to ratify. Maybe they might want to speed that up now.
This is a bit of a rhetorical question, Tim.
Yeah.
I can expect clearly what my answer would be. And the answer is that we have bringing down barriers on many areas, clearly starting from trade, in our DNA as European Union. I think focusing on credible, proportionate, as we argued, targeted where it hurts, response on the tariffs is part of the strategy. At the same time, I think, and Moreno alluded to that before, the European Union can present to the rest of the world an approach on the issue of trade, on the issue of delivering global commons, in starting with the green transition, which is different than the US administration. I think that overall strategy must be part of the answer. So Mercosur is one. And here, the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, signed the agreement in spite, we know, of the reservation by France.
Mm-hmm.
I think the agreements that are shaping up vis-a-vis Mexico, vis-a-vis Switzerland, the important mission of the College of Commissioners to India in the next weeks, actually, gives a very, very important signal that there is a different approach. So it's not going to be clearly a multilateralism of the naive type that we have known in the past. It's going to be more bottom-up, free trade areas and investment agreements, but we must show to the rest of the world and actually engage them that in positive-sum gains. And at the end of the day, I'm actually pretty confident that that will show that we are on the right side of history. So yes, tariff response, but at the same time, framing this into a strategy which is globally positive for the rest of the world.
But at the same time, many of your colleagues are worried about where the EU continues to find growth. The recent Draghi report, for example, was recommending that economic strategies to find growth should change in the EU. Does what's happening now make that even more important?
Absolutely. I have to say, we have heard so many times in the past, you mentioned it before, during the global financial crisis,
yes,
praising the external surplus as a sign of competitiveness. What they said at the very beginning, which was my second contradiction, which is the one of balance of payments for the US, applies also to Europe. In the current circumstances here, in a world dominated by power gains, depending excessively from the external demand is not a sign of strength and competitiveness, it is actually a vulnerability, and we know that. So I think I described before what should be done on the global trade. At the same time, I think it is clear what should be done on the domestic side to shore up the indigenous source of growth. Draghi, let us reports show the way how to do it. I would say I am a little bit worried about the initial response because lots of agreement on the what, bit less agreement on the how. And I think it is very important that the Commission proposal of the so-called competitiveness compass, which has many ingredients of the Draghi and Letta, is complemented by the creation of a central fiscal capacity for the supply of European public goods in several areas, which must be part of the game, part of, let's say, reshaping the business model of the European economy.
Moreno, we started by talking about US policy as an experiment. It's a very large experiment. Do you think the experiment's going to work in the medium and long term? Do you think it will strengthen the US economy or weaken it?
I think that it will weaken it in the sense that the Trump administration is introducing explicitly or implicitly a number of changes in the US capitalism. So you have now a much more stronger politically connected capitalism. In the months that followed the election of Donald Trump, the politically connected companies in the US performed much better than the Standard & Poor's. Take, for instance, Tesla, just to take one company. For the entire 2024, it underperformed Standard & Poor's until November. On November 5th, it has a huge jump and now has been overperforming the Standard & Poor's, even despite the recent losses by 20-25%. So Were there very good news on economic terms at the beginning of November for Tesla? No. Have there been very good news for Tesla after the 6th of November? No. On the contrary, I mean, it has lost market share, and even for the first time in 10 years, the number of cars sold have declined. But still, it's performing much better than the Standard & Poor's. So this leads already financial markets are incorporating that and allocating resources not according to the most efficient way. Moreover, it seems likely that the Trump administration will be much more lax on the fighting of monopolistic positions on the way forward. We know that some of the capitalists connected to the administration, like Peter Thiel or even Elon Musk, they are pretty in favor of developing monopolistic positions and they don't see problems for the economy. But as economists used to say, political positions rather generate rents and reduce the efficiency and the innovation of the economy. So all this means that in the longer term, the U.S. economy is going to suffer. There is, however, a wild card that I think is worth mentioning, that is AI and disruptive technologies, that they could generate productivity increases that would offset some of these negative developments. Although in a counterfactuals, the Trump scenario is still worse than a situation where a market economy operates efficiently, but people don't look at counterfactuals, they look at the real data. On the other hand, also on AI and disruptive technology, it's also true that it can increase inequalities and it can have destabilizing effects on the labor market. And even more important, it can generate boom and bust in the stock market and generate a lot of financial instability, in particular if in the meantime the financial markets have been deregulated, as is happening right now with the Trump administration. So cryptocurrencies and irrational exuberance on the possible economic impact of AI could trigger financial instability and a rather bumpy ride for the US economy going forward.
What's better for the EU? That the experiment in the US works and they win so much they get tired of winning and we have a strong US economy, or it fails and the US economy is weaker?
For Europe to have a strong US economy is always better because we have a strong economic relationship. And therefore, if a weak US economy slows the European economy. So in an ideal world, a strong US economy, a strong European economy is the first best. But the strength of the US economy doesn't depend on us. I mean, we will not affect the decision of the Trump administration on how it intends to go forward. And therefore, the EU has to prepare and, as Marco said, I mean, to reconsider our model of growth. This is particularly true if the US economy weakens in the long term. That means that we will have an additional headwind, and therefore we have to rely less on the transatlantic relationship. But also, if the US continues to grow strongly, there should not be room for complacency for the EU. The relationship has become much more volatile, and therefore, over-reliance of the EU economy on the US is not any longer warranted or even advisable.
We will be talking about this again, I am sure, but for now, Moreno, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Marco, thank you as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tim.
If you want to go back to the source, the column is America Under Trump, Domestic and European Implications. Authors, of course, Moreno Bertoldi and Marco Butti. It was published in Vox EU on the 13th of January, 2025.
Next on Vox Talks Economics. As employers everywhere summon their staff back to the office, how efficient is working from home?